Welcome to They Mostly Puttered at Night. Mostly. Oh, wait, hold on. Am I doing it? Or are you?
I'll do it. It's my turn.
Okay.
Yes. I'm Graveyard, joined by my co-host Salem. I forgot to update that in the script. I just noticed that. All right. This is episode 145, our weekly All Things Horror podcast. The 21st century has arrived, mostly, in our deep dive into Japanese horror. Whether we are mesmerized by a liar, turning straight into ash out of sorrow, we're weirdly obsessed with our spirographs and drawing vortexes galore. We have something for you. We are looking at Kier, Pulse, and Uzumaki and answering the age-old question. Do you want to see a ghost? So Kier from 1997, released in Japan, 2001 here in the States. Uzumaki, I'm assuming I'm saying that right.
I don't know.
From 2000 Japan, but 2002 here in the States, and Pulse, originally released in Japan in 2001, but released here in America 1 year in 2005 before the American remake. And this is kind of one of the things that, you know, this is the midst of the Japanese remake craze, I would say, is when the Pulse came out in America.
Yeah, well, again, it was the early 2000s to where most of the franchises here in the US were kind of dead.
Yeah.
So they were desperately trying to grab things. And so they were re-releasing a lot of other country stuff here locally and then trying to remake the ones that didn't quite hit.
Yeah, because that's the miss of PG-13 horror in America.
Right, yeah.
Leading to the new French Extremity, which
made the horror landscape a wasteland.
Yes, very, very much so. But I'm excited. You know, I had seen Kier and Pulse, I don't know how long, I'm pretty sure I watched Pulse before the American one, or right after, just to see what it was like, so. But you hadn't seen any of these, correct?
No, this is the time period where I was very uninterested in the horror genre, so no, I didn't see any. Or the remakes, so.
Or the remakes, wow. Well, this is why we're doing the show, right? Just to catch up what we missed.
Well, again, I really didn't want to watch ones from other countries because I didn't know what was going on with them at the time, and I didn't really care. And then, like, the remakes were being done by the same people who were doing, like, the PG-13 stuff. It really didn't spark my interest there either, so I just didn't care at all,
and that's absolutely fair. All right, so let's get into this. Kier from 1997. I'll say it right now, it's Japan 7. That's how I felt about this movie. But essentially we are introduced to a guy on just kind of lounging at the beach, and a guy walks up to him, just starts asking questions like, oh, where am I? Do you know who I am? Like, and just kind of repeating himself like he has amnesia. He's like, I don't remember anything. And then we kind of cut to essentially a guy just murdering a woman in the hotel room. You know, detectives show up and like, oh, this is bound to happen. It was, oh, it's the husband. Oh, he's naked now. He didn't take any clothes. Oh, well, I don't think we ever see the naked guy again or hear from him again.
Yeah, he was in the wall.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they're like, his clothes are still here. So if he left, he left naked.
Yeah.
And then the guy was like, you know, in the hallway and he heard something, and then he opened up the panel in the wall and he was like all curled up in there crying.
That's right. And then we introduced to a woman at the doctor's office who's kind of reading a book, and she's there for some mental thing. We don't really know at that point in time what she's doing there, because she seems perfectly okay. Her husband, we find out now, is the detectives, is kind of looking at this, and they're noticing that all these people are kind of like have an X carved into them, like in their neck or their chest, right? And it's just like, okay, that's weird. And the detectives just kind of trying to figure out what the hell is going on there. He talks to his friend, who's like a psychologist, like essentially trying to help him like figure out what's getting into this mind, because it seems like there's a serial killer on the loose, you know, with the same, you know, mutilation to the body. So, I mean, I think that's a logical.
Yeah, it's a serial killer, but it's being done by multiple other people because they always find who does the killing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always somebody different, but it's the same MO each time.
Right. So they're just trying to figure out what is going on there. And we still see the guy who seems to be suffering from amnesia essentially kind of going into like a police station and just talking like a police booth. Like we see, apparently these are common Japan. We see these in at least two of these movies, right? There's just like one or two police stations at that place. And he goes there. He's like, oh, that's weird. Who am I? I don't know. I'm going to go to sleep now. And it starts talking silently. He's like, oh, tell me about you. Who are you? And he starts, other cop that's there, his cop starts answering. He kind of flicks with the lighter. And, well, he comes, his partner comes back and just murders him. And the amnesia guy just disappears. Or he doesn't disappear. He gets taken in, doesn't he?
Who?
Okay,
because what happens was is he talks to him, the same amnesia guy, and then that cop murders his partner.
Mm-hmm.
He just shoots him casually and then cuts an X in him, and so of course he's a cop, so they pull him in.
Mm-hmm.
And this one they're doing like experiments with, and they're like trying to get him to like look into a light to see if he's been hypnotized. And when they do that, he kind of like reenacts going over to the cop and like fake cutting an X into him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, so why did you do that? And he's like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. So that they kind of realize that these people are being hypnotized in some way to do this, and then from that point they're trying to figure out who.
Right. And the psychologist friends starts doing all this research to try to figure out, it's like, oh, here's like this videotape from like the early or late 1800s. And someone kind of just like being hypnotized at that point in time. And he's like, don't really know who this is. Like, okay, so we're trying to figure out who this guy is. He could be literally anyone at this point. And so while the cop's kind of like in the hospital, doesn't the guy shows up there and kind of just goes into like a secluded dark room. He's trying to like clearly hypnotize the detective that's there. But he's just not answering any questions. He's like, no, this is bullshit. I'm not answering your questions. You're going to answer mine. He's kind of like trying to hypnotize him and almost kind of does it. And other cops show up and they take him away and put him in prison. And so then he's kind of doing the same routine. He's like, okay, I don't know who I am. Who am I? Who are you? Where am I? What is this? And they're just like, we're getting no answers from it. And so the detective's trying to figure out, it's like, hey, this guy doesn't have memories, but I think he's faking it because he just doesn't want to answer. So he kind of brings him in front of a board of other cops and doctors, I guess, to prove that he's either faking it or is legit, has memory loss. And he kind of convinces, the board, they're like, yeah, that's him. But he kind of also then brainwashes a guy that's questioning him. Right. And
there's a lot of vagary stuff happening.
Very much here. So.
It basically seems like whoever is talking to this guy seems to be like hypnotized by him, kind of, sort of.
Right, because he's essentially, his mind is empty. He's emptying their minds by making them question, like, oh, who am I? And being very suggestible people after that point in time. They get his license. They find out that he's like a leaser at like some welding place, and has a whole bunch of books on hypnosis and mesmerization and stuff like that he was like a college student that was learning about this, and he saw this works of this one guy who seems to be like the godfather, I guess, of it, of mesmerizing. He's like, oh, that's weird.
Mesmer, the mesmerizer.
Exactly. Exactly. So, he's trying to still get into the cop's head, like, no, you still have to, do this stuff. And he doesn't understand what's going on there. And the cops keeps having visions of his wife, and we find out that she has schizophrenia and that he's having just a rough time at home dealing with this, because she goes out and gets lost, and she's able to find her way to the hospital, but it's just concerning for him. Essentially, he seems like sees a vision of his wife dead in his house. He's like, oh, no, wait, there she is. She's fine. All good. And while he's questioning the guy who has like just a huge jail cell, in my opinion, he's still not answering his questions, but he has access to like water and fire. And he starts kind of going through that, you know, mesmerization of the detective and almost takes care of him. And he goes, Larry, I can't take this anymore. There's a call that his wife shows up at the hospital. So he leaves and other people there are watching him. And the detective comes back and, well, no, he's gone. He is able to escape. He kind of mesmerized the guy that was talking to him and he learned more information about him. So he kind of tracks him down and ends up like finding him like in an old abandoned warehouse. And he starts to try his memorization stuff. And you know, he says, no, screw this shit, and just shoots him dead. But we are, you know, kind of led to believe that his wife is dead and potentially with an ex-carpenter that maybe detective did it, because the people have no idea that they actually did this murder, right? They're in an amnesic state when they find them. They don't recall any of that happening. But you know, we don't know anything, so we kind of just end up with like the detective at, you know, a coffee place. And I had to look this up because they said there's something that this setting up the sequel to it, because there's a waitress in the back that has a knife. I didn't see it.
I wasn't looking for it. So I didn't see anything either, but I also wasn't looking. So
they're alluding to that while that guy is dead, that's still potentially happening. That disease is still around.
So it's going to be like he hypnotized a whole bunch of other people and they're going to have to find out what they're hypnotized to do.
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably. That's about it. You know, so I saw this, I don't know, remember when? Probably when it came out in the States on DVD. That's probably the last time, so what, 20-ish years ago? This was an interesting movie to me. It's, like I said, it's to me, it's, you know, Japan's answer to the movie Seven, where they're say mystery, and you know, because the you could argue that the guy in Seven was also just persuading people to commit the sins, never really doing it necessarily himself. Sometimes,
no, he was the people that he like quote unquote persuaded to do it was like he was holding a gun to them.
Well, yeah,
so it wasn't like wasn't the same in that way at all.
But like the noir story, this is almost a noir movie, I'd say.
The storytelling version of it, sure.
Yeah. So what was your kind of first thoughts on this?
I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting seeing like a kind of a police procedural horror movie from a Japanese standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remind, I'm sure there's a lot of other movies like it, but I don't know if I've seen them.
No, I haven't seen one like this.
Yeah, so it was interesting from that viewpoint of it. This isn't my high points, but I'll talk about it now anyway. Mm-hmm. Did you ever play the game called Indigo Prophecy?
Oh, that sounds familiar.
It was a Quantic Dream game. It was like their second or third game.
Okay.
Anyways, the plot of that game just kind of reminded me of this film. I meant to look up what year it came out. I'm pretty sure it's after this film came out. But essentially, it's like the kind of same thing happens to you as a character. Like you're in a diner and you like wake up and you're in a bathroom and you've just murdered someone.
Mm.
But you don't remember doing it and you have no idea who the person is or why you would have done it. Like, so you remember everything before this, and then you just murdered this person, and you don't know why. And as you, like, you know, try to, like, research, you know, look through the game and find clues and shit like that, you find out it's happened to a bunch of other people.
Mm.
And it's kind of similar in the way, it doesn't end the same, obviously, but it's kind of similar in the way that there's people that are murdering people under, like, some kind of hypnosis.
Yeah.
Right. and not being aware of doing it. It was interesting. Again, I'm almost positive the game came out after. I just wonder if
2005.
I wonder if they got the concept of it from this film. It's a lot of similarities.
I mean, it's not impossible if they saw it in 2001 and they came here to the States that maybe they had 3 or 4 years to develop it. I can see that.
Right.
I can see that.
Because I played it because I was into Quantic Dream because I played their first game, which a lot of people did not play. But I played it because it was in a discount bin and David Bowie was in it. And I was like, a game with David Bowie? So I picked it up for whatever, $5, whatever the discount was at that time. Mm-hmm. And so I played it. Omnicron, the Nomad Soul was the name of the game. And so when I heard about other games coming out from them, I always picked them up.
So that's a Dreamcast game. Nice.
What was?
Nomad Soul.
I played it on PC. But
PC and Dreamcast, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I back in those days, if you waited long enough, PC games would end up in the discount bin for like $5. That was where I lived at that time. I didn't have a whole lot of money, but I always wanted to play games, so you buy cheap ass PC games. So there's a lot of junk, cheap PC games that I've played, especially from that era.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll have to. I mean, yeah, I've heard of it. I never played it, though. I realized that. That was PS2. Well,
maybe a little before that, but yeah, around that era. But it's just an interesting point. There's a lot of similarities. I thought it was interesting.
I'm just looking it up right now. I don't see anything to the year here, which is interesting because that sounds very similar, but.
Yeah, the game, I don't remember the whole story, but the game was like supposed to be a trilogy. And so while they were making the first like half of the game, they were under the, you know, kind of notion that they would be making three separate games. And I'm guessing about halfway through production, they found out that no, there were not going to be any sequels. This was going to be it. So the first half of the game is very interesting and building up. And then kind of the last part of the game is just like you get all this exposition all at once, like explaining everything that's going on. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I can see that happening just for.
Yeah, so I'm not going to say it's a great game. I'm just saying like the beginning of it was interesting and it has a lot of similarities. But yeah, that's all I got.
Interesting. Well, maybe I'll have to play that. So I'll go into my highlights here. I think it's interesting to have, you know, the power of suggestion essentially be the connecting tie, right? I don't think we have very many versions of that in America. I think a lot of it's more so like supernatural power of suggestion, not just like just mental, you know, being hypnotized.
Right.
You know, it's almost like a David Lynch style story for sure. You know, and potentially that makes, you know, if you really adhere to the woman in the back scene drawing the knife, it's a bad ending. You know, we think that maybe, you know, the guy's been stopped, but potentially there's more to it. You don't necessarily know. And as we said, it's just interesting to see the take of the noir style of Japan. You know, which, you know, obviously missing the voiceover stuff, but pretty damn close to full noir, I would say. And kind of just, you know, seeing that just aloofness of the guy who's, you know, telling people to commit these murders. If he's doing it and he's, you know, that good, he's really good at it. Because, you know, it doesn't take very long for him just to be pretty rhythmic just to get people into that deep, you know, sleep, not sleep essentially, but like being at the level of being hypnotized. Because everyone says there's some state you can be in that you are prone to the power of suggestion, but it just varies wildly from person to person, but everyone can get there. Which is interesting.
You know, for sure.
Which makes you think, like, okay, you know, can you, you know, makes yourself think, like, can that happen to me? Could I be that persuaded to do something like that and not know it's happening? which really leans into the horror side of it too. Psychological right. thriller as well. Those are my highlights. How about yours?
Two of them I already talked about, but the Japanese police procedural, I already talked about that, and then the concept of and the connection to Indigo Prophecy, I already talked about that. And again, it's interesting just to see, like you talked about, you know, the power of suggestion, like the danger of just talking to someone, right? Like just talking to them is a danger enough that, you know, you could murder someone else and not even be aware of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Is interesting. That's all I got for high points. So go to my low points. Yeah. Again, this happens in a lot of Japanese movies, but I just noticed that in this one is like, there's such a lack of space.
Uh-huh.
Everything is like so crowded together. Like every scene when they're like, a guy is like sitting and talking at a desk. There's like another guy like at a desk, like right perpendicular, like right there. And like every scene that's like, there's such a lack of space that like, there's everybody's like crowded into the same little tiny spot, you know, like everybody's like apartment is like a box.
Yes, it is.
It's interesting to see. And just, I know it's like, you know, a lot of Japanese, you know, they built, you know, there's not a lot of space for a lot of people. And so space is a commodity there. I know that it's just odd seeing it in films, you know, compared to like what we see.
Oh, have you, know, you ever like, seen... Yeah, sorry.
Well, again, we see like, you know, like, you know, it's like a guy who works minimum wage job and he goes home and he has like one of those open concept kitchens with this giant living room. And, you know, like everybody's living in these like giant homes all the time. And then in Japan, it's like no matter how much money you're making, you're still living in a little studio box.
Right. I saw a documentary like, the sleep hotels. That's literally just like a coffin that you slide into and that's how you go take a nap for the workday.
Yeah. No, that's what they call them, is coffin hotel.
There's no way I'd be able to do that.
Yeah, it's like, it's a bed. You lay down and the TV like folds down from the ceiling. Like, yeah, that's it. Like, it's a bed. It's like a twin bed that you're in. That's it.
Yep. Oh. Couldn't do that.
Are you actually claustrophobic?
I like to be able to stretch out if I need to.
You can stretch out. You just can't stretch up.
Yeah, that's true. What else you got?
I mean, his wife's, that whole story was just sad. Like it was just a depressing story. And there was like a weird scene where like, she like potentially had like maybe like telekinetic powers or something.
That she was able to know the book and yeah.
And like the table started like vibrating and shit on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of that's, but it went nowhere. It went completely nowhere. Just, correct. So it was just a sad, depressing story that had a lot of the interesting elements that literally went nowhere. And she like died like off screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the detective had like these crazy anger issues. Like he kept like slamming his fist into stuff and like breaking shit and like threatening violence on everybody. Like when the dude was in the like interview room, he like threw his coffee at the window. Even the guy can't even see him.
Yep.
Like, dude, somebody's got to clean that up, man. Like what are you doing? But anyway, I think he had some serious anger issues that he needed to work out. And it's sad that he had a wife that he was trying to take care of when he's got all these anger issues. Like, I'm tired of taking care of her. Like, dude, get a nurse or something. Like, what? You know what I mean? Come on, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't like the ending. The ending was just kind of like an offbeat. Like nothing really happened. It just was over.
Yep.
Like there was no like ending. There's no like resolution at all to the story. It just like ended at that point, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like the dude, he's like, "Hey, what's going on? You want to talk?" And he's like, "Bang!" Yep. that was the end. It's like, okay, that wasn't worth it.
No mind games back and forth.
Right? Like, yeah. Nothing. Nope. Just nope. Bang. Done. Okay. Like he found a hidden room, and the only thing in the hidden room was like a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Of a guy with no face. Like, what the fuck was the point of that? Like, what is that all about? Anyway, no, whatever. Yeah. I just thought it was a very offbeat ending. That's all I got.
All right, going to Milo points. It's interesting to hear, like, obviously there's more Buddhism and then Christianity and Catholicism is newer to Japan, right? But everyone going, oh, the devil made them do it. How could the devil make them do it? Like, it's weird to hear that in another country. Like, I feel like that'd be our American style of right away.
Oh yeah, for sure. It would be immediate.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like,
Man, the toast fell jelly side down. Devil's here.
Yeah. That was like the hardened detective's first thing is like the devil made them do it. I'm like, no. And like, you're like, oh, that woman was that's prostitution. Well, murder's bound to happen if you're prostitution. I'm like, I don't think that's really the case either.
Yeah, I don't think that's a thing, dude.
No, but it's the same guy.
I'm Maybe like, in his mind, I guess.
I guess. Who knows? It's just like, it was weird to get like that videotape scene of like the woman in like the late 1800s. Do you see that? There's a guy that walked in front of her. Yeah. She's hypnotized. Okay.
Yeah. Like, what? Like, what link does this possibly fucking have to what's happening right now?
I'm not sure his psychologist buddy actually knew what he was talking about.
I don't think so either. And then he just like left the film
mm-hmm.
at a certain point. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I could see them like, oh man, maybe his friend's been, hypnotized now. He's just gone.
Yeah, these modern-ish Japanese movies just like love coming up with plot threads and just like abandoning them. I don't know what if that's like their thing. I don't know, but they happen in all these movies.
And it's also random for his friend just to either have the rugby ball or football just there in the park. He just picks up.
Yeah.
Oh, they're gonna play toss now, and that's about when he leaves. Like,
he just needed a prop. He needed something to hold on to.
I mean, maybe because he didn't play catch with him, he left. It's fair. It's fair. And they sure gave the guy in jail a lot of access to things that he could use to hypnotize people.
Yeah. And like you said, the jail cell was oddly large.
It's bigger than the detective's apartment.
Right. It was like, and it had like two rooms. I'm like, what kind of deluxe fucking jail cell is this?
Yeah. It's just weird that, the prisoners have more space than the citizens do. So.
Correct.
But yeah, as you said, anticlimactic ending. We should really boom. Fuck, he's dead. All right. Job's done.
Yeah. Secret room. Ooh, we're going to find something interesting in there? No. Picture. Okay. What's he going to do? He's going to sit down at a bed all depressed. Okay. Other guy comes in. Ooh, this is going to be an interesting. Nope. He just shoots him. Oh, yep. It's over.
Yep.
That's interesting. That's it.
So, I mean, it was a lot of build up to nothing.
Essentially. Right.
So. That's all I have. So our out ofs for this week, just because it was so ingrained into my head because of Paul's dial-up modems out of 10. So Salem, how many dial-up modems out of 10 do you give?
Well, dial-up modems is the era, I guess.
It is.
Late 90s, early 2000s dial-up modem. That's the trademark of the times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, there's some interesting things going on in this film. I just think like it kind of fell apart at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't wrap up things like at all, just kind of like ended at a point. I'm like, oh, okay. Did you like run out of ideas when you were writing the script? Like what happened? So yeah, it's okay. There's interesting things going on, but there's again, not enough, I guess, tied up ends for me to like really bite into it. So I'm going to say, five dial-up modems out of 10.
Yeah, it's for all you said, for it being nearly 2 hours, not a lot to go off of.
Right, right.
I noticed it in this movie in particular and kind of like other stuff too. There's just like so many pauses in scenes, like people speak a sentence. And it's almost like the sitcom era where like, aha, you said a line, wait for applause and then say.
They're waiting beats to like. Settle in the moment, the emotion that they're trying to convey in that moment. The problem is they're not really doing that well enough.
No.
To sell the beats, right?
So it just seems like there's weird pauses and all these things. But I agree. This is something I don't need to watch yet. It's an interesting foray into this, director's and writer's filmography. But I will give it 5.5 dial-up modems out of 10. It has good pieces. It'd be interesting to have seen this as an American remake, because I'm sure we had a lot more flashy stuff and like a mentalist battle at the end.
Something fun.
So, all right. So take us through Uzumaki from 2000/2002.
All right, I'm gonna do my best here. I had to write it down because I was like, what is happening? I was like, I was so confused that I just started writing it down because I'm like, I'm never going to remember this shit. Like, yeah. I don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we'll start off like there's a girl and a boy who've been kind of sort of like, you know, attached at the hip since like they were small children.
Mm-hmm.
And now they like start dating, I guess.
Sure.
I'm just going to summarize the whole beginning of the film as that because there's a lot of other dumb shit that happens, but it's mostly pointless. It's like, you know, beats in their lives as teenagers, but those beats don't have any relevance after the beginning of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to not even worry about talking about them. That's all you need to know is there's a girl and a boy. They're dating and they've known each other for a long time. That's all you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, the girl's dad is, he makes pottery and the boy's dad is like insane.
Yes, he is.
So we're introduced to him as the potter guy is making like a plate and the dad is like obsessed with this like spiral pattern in plate. And then we basically learn that he's like obsessed with spirals in every way. Like he literally has like a room in his house filled with these spirals, right? Mm-hmm. And in Japanese, they're called Uzumaki, which is the title of the film.
Vortex.
Yeah, so he's got like all these signs and posters and drawings and fucking items that just have spirals in them that he's like obsessed with. And so then the mom decides in her infinite wisdom to throw out all of his spirals, even though he's like gets violent when there's not enough like spiral bread to eat.
Oh, yeah. He has to eat spirals.
Right. Like everything has to be fucking spirals. So there's not enough spiral for him to eat. So he like gets like violent with her and her reaction is just to throw out his spirals.
Yep.
So he like flips out and he's like, oh, I'm just going to make my own spirals. And he starts like spiraling his eyes around or something. I don't know. He goes crazy. Everybody like leaves because he's like dangerous. Mm-hmm. So the girl goes to deliver this plate that her dad, the potter, made with the spiral in it for this guy that he ordered because he wants another spiral thing. So she goes to the house to get him and he had somehow killed himself in the washing machine, making himself into a spiral.
He gumbified himself.
Right. Right. We don't really see it at that time, but we do see it later. It's as dumb as it sounds.
Yeah, he's Mr. Bill.
Right. Yeah. So then there's like, you know, a funeral and then there's like a weird cloud that comes out of the sky that makes a big spiral and they see like the dad's face in it. And then the spiral cloud like touches this pond that's in their neighborhood. And then that's it.
Uh-huh.
And life just goes back to normal after that. And then they talk to this reporter guy who's like, oh, I'm going to look into this spiral stuff. Like this is like, as a connection to the history of this town and the pond and all this kind of stuff. I'm going to look into it. Now, I'm going to give you a spoiler right here. We never get that answer. We never get even see this fucking guy again.
Well, clearly it's the snake that lives in the pond.
Right. Yeah, that's it. That's it. He's like, it's like, oh, we're going to get a backstory. We're going to figure out what's going on. Like, blah, blah, blah. No, nope. You don't get anything. It's like this whole lead up to like finding out what's going on just literally goes nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So like the potter dad goes to the pond to get clay. He and Cecily gets infected because the obsession with spirals is now like becoming like a disease, kind of
very contagious.
Right. So like there's now spirals like everywhere. Like the boys are growing spirals out of their backs and they drink a lot of water, like turning into snails.
Mm-hmm.
And then the girls get like all these spirals in their hair and their hair gets all like crazy big.
Yeah. Rockabillies would be proud.
Right. Yeah. So the boy's mom, the one who, you know, with that threw out all the spirals, she gets like crazy, but in an anti-spiral way.
Mm-hmm.
So she like shaves off her hair. She cuts off her own fingerprints because they're spirally. Right. And so she's like locked in a mental ward, you know, in a hospital because she's like crazy like that now. So she like, you know, they go and visit her in the hospital and he's like, oh no, there's a spiral in the ear. If she finds out about that, she's going to like stab her own ears.
Right.
And then the reporter calls and said, hey, let's go meet me by the pond. So they go to the pond, and then the guy wasn't there, and then nothing happens. That, like I said, the reporter essentially had left the film already.
Yeah.
It was just an excuse to get them away from the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So now that they're gone from the hospital, the mom is attacked by a giant, like, centipede that crawls in her ear and bites her ear. And then the ghost dad, like, appears and is talking about, you know, spirals and how there's a spiral in her ear. And then she literally stabs her own ear.
Right.
And then that's it. She's gone. And then there's like a kind of a montage where they show all the boys that have turned into snails are literally snails. They're like climbing up the sides of buildings and shit. Mm-hmm. The girls have all these crazy, like, spiral hair. The boy and the girl try to leave town. And they can't. The boy gets infected when they're like, I don't know, they go into a barn for some reason. The boy gets infected and his whole body like starts twisting up. And then he dies because of the twists.
Yes. Oh, of course.
Right. So then the boy, then he's all wrapped up in spiral, and now he turns into like a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And then grabs the girl, and then that's the end of the movie.
Well, they show a little bit of montage of all the people around town dying as spirals.
Right. But
and, yes.
Right. That's it.
It's the town that dreads spiral.
Yeah. And that's literally the end of the film. And so I got all the beats. I know I did because I wrote them down.
Yep.
Yes, yep. There's a whole lot of dumb fucking shit going on.
You're not wrong on that.
There we go. That's Uzumaki. What were your first impressions, buddy?
Not good.
Yeah. <one. laughs> Yeah. That's about what I got out of it as well. So,
there's not actually a lot to talk about, unfortunately, with this movie. And that's a shame, because I'm like watching it and like, if we didn't get to something. No, there's four chapters. The fourth chapter is literally like 3 minutes of montages of people, like five people around town that
are right. Just, and like every time it tried to like give you a real story, it just like went nowhere.
Correct.
Like there's it's like it feels like it's a bunch of scenes like from a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to make like a wrap up film, like wrapping up all the ideas from the TV show, and it just feels like it's wrong. I know this is based on a manga.
I think that's the problem.
Yeah. And I think they tried to cram the entire manga into 1 hour and 30 minute film, and it horribly failed.
Right.
From what I understand, they remade it as a show fairly recently. I haven't watched it, but mm-hmm. Yeah, so supposedly they're trying to like tell the actual whole story of this now, but it's been what, 25 years? So obviously it wasn't that big of a story to tell, because you know they stopped telling.
Yeah. Do you want to do your highlights first?
Hey, sure, why not?
Okay.
So I mean, the concept of being like obsessed with something so much that it like controls your life and you literally like have to kill yourself is an interesting concept. I don't think it's necessarily presented in a way in this film well, but I like that concept of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I do like how they do some of the camera angles and close-ups. Like they did like, you know, bizarre stuff. Like people would be like upside down or sideways or like really weird, like zoomed up angles on their faces. It was interesting. It kept it fresh, at least with the, you know, cinematography anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fucking rotary phone.
Sure was.
In this film that is used. It's not just a set piece. It is a used part of the film in 2000. In Japan. Like there's no fucking way they're still using. I mean, I get maybe hospitals took a long time to catch up. I don't know. But well, it was a rotary phone in a hospital.
Yeah. You think they wouldn't have that there because it spins in a spiral.
Right. Well, yeah, something. I was like, I figured like, oh, it's gotta be rotary because of the circle. No, not that. No, it's just there.
Yeah.
Anyway. And I guess the human snail thing is unique.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it literally went nowhere. There mm-hmm. was no point for it being there. There was like a weird scene where they're like picking on a kid for being really slow, and he only came to school when it was raining. And he was like covered in slime, and nobody seemed to be thinking that was weird.
No.
I don't know. It's very fucking bizarre. But anyway, the human snail thing is, I haven't seen that before. So at least that's unique, I guess. That's really all I got.
Yeah. For me, the idea of the cursed town was interesting, right? That it goes back to, you talk about like typhoons and stuff like that. Typhoons that hit Japan because it's a vortex, it's a spiral and stuff like that. And people being obsessed, and just kind of like the descent of madness of like, I wouldn't say it's not rural Japan, but like a suburb, right?
Yeah, it's not like a major city, right?
Right, but essentially only a tunnel can get you in and out of the town, it seems like. But the idea, like I said, the idea of the cursed town, like the entire town's descent into madness, is an interesting idea to tell all the different stories that could have been told in this movie. And it is a little unhinged at some points. They do, you know, like I said, the mom cutting off her, you know, hair and her fingertips is unhinged. You know, it wasn't played as wacky at that point in time. It's like mental illness.
And her, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was, but yes.
Yeah. Her part was only like the most normal chaotic death, I guess, of the movie.
Right.
That's about all I have. I will end my low points. I know it's a manga, but I'm kind of jumping this all looped together. I'm calling it Japanese hijinks. If you think of wacky Japanese things, like the sound effects, the close up, and the just like the weird stuff, especially the dad's eyes spiraling, that's this movie.
Well, here, what I wrote is my first. I'll give it to you right now. This is Japanese B movie cheese.
Yes.
Okay. Obviously, it's different from our B movie cheese, but not that much different. But like this, that is what this is. This is Japanese B movie cheese. They turn up the wacky dial because they know they're not going to deliver on the exposition side. So.
Yeah. It felt like anime at times to me too, like really bad anime. With some of the stuff they did, like I said, the sound effects were just awful. And I actually had seen the close-ups of that kid that was like, you know, obsessed with her at the different angles. I didn't remember what I was watching in some list and like why this, what the list even was. But I actually know that scene from this movie. Now I could be completely mistaken about that kid. Did he not die at the bottom of the staircase just to get killed by a car later? Or was that a different kid at the bottom of that spiral staircase?
Like I said, it doesn't matter. Because like they build up these like teenage relationships that they have, and then they literally disappear. They don't appear again. But like, bring him back for a montage, and it's like, okay, how are you going to remember that? That kid was like an hour ago.
Yeah, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure that was the same kid that, like, you know, she scorned him at school, so he threw himself down the, you know, the stairwell, and he's dead. We kind of start to move that. Oh, wait, no, he's back. Oh, wait, now he's spiraled in someone's car tire. I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's the same kid. I can't tell.
I don't know. No, the kid that fell down the stairway was some unknown kid.
Oh, so just another kid that was wanted attention because he wasn't popular.
Well, it was... What we're supposed to know is that he was the first one obsessed with spirals.
Oh.
And it was a spiral staircase. And he went to the top of the spiral staircase and was obsessed with the spiral, and that's why he jumped off.
See, I guess I missed something because I thought she scorned him at school, so he jumped off and killed himself.
No, that was a different guy.
Okay.
It was a guy that we had never seen alive. It was just some person. I think that was supposed to be the foreshadowing of he was the first person to be infected or something.
Yeah. And then, you know, the popular clique, the women, like, oh, look at her crazy hair as she does this easy, like, you know, gymnastic move that everyone's wearing. And, like, everyone's in the school just can be, like, zombified, I would say. Like the girl and her friend are like the only ones that are actually moving, you know, asymmetrically to everyone else.
Well, it's like, okay. It's like, any high school film where you're looking at the popular clique or the focus clique is doing some interesting thing and everybody else is just standing there watching them because they are NPCs. That's what's happening. They're focusing on them and telling everybody to stand there and look at them.
Yeah. That and the sound effects are just like goofy as all hell in this.
Correct.
Well, the guy's detective's eye or whoever's eye is in the car crash, and his eyes kind of has a hole in the windshield and it's spiraling around the windshield. As you said, Japanese B movie cheese turned up to like 15.
Right.
That's what I have. How about you?
Yeah, I already said the B movie cheese. The effects are terrible. Mm-hmm. In this film, just all around. Like, the only things that's okay is like when the people are folded into weird shapes, like those are fun, but that's really it. Everything else looks like ass. Okay. Now I'm watching this film and they're speaking a different language.
Yeah.
Right. If I can still tell that you're acting as shit in another language, like I don't even know how bad they would be in their native language, but watching these people, I can see how terrible of acting it is, even though they're not speaking my language. That's how bad it is. This movie has some terrible, terrible acting. And the fucking giant centipede thing, that was unnecessary. Yeah. I don't even know why the fuck it was there. It was disgusting. It was huge. I don't like it.
Yeah.
No. That's all I got.
All right. So I will go first for dial-up moments out of 10. This is not my cup of jam. This is cup of tea. This is not my jam. This is not any, like, I like cheese. We all know that. This is too much for me. I can see why it's a manga. I think it translates better to that than to a live action movie, quite honestly.
I feel like they tried to do too much.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to do too much and essentially boiled down to them doing nothing at all. You know, because there's like tiny little like sprinkles of this story, this story, this story, this story, and they never followed up on any of them. So it's like, I think there's a whole lot missing. It really feels like a highlight reel from like a series.
Right. I agree. Yeah, it's episodic, but poorly done. All that being said, I'm going to give this, I'm going to get Uzumaki 3 dial-up modems out of 10. How about you?
Yeah. Yeah, I was not impressed at all. But yeah, I was at the same. I'll give it a 3 dial-up modems out of 10.
Yeah, this is wacky in all the wrong ways.
Right. Correct. And then we move on to Pulse.
Yes.
Original in Japan, 2001, released in the U.S. in 2005.
The Japanese version, yes. Yeah, so it's essentially the Japanese, we'll get to the Pulse American at some point in time, but the Japanese is essentially, we're introduced to essentially two different stories that are kind of meeting at the third act. We have a group of people that are working at, you know, with a professor on growing stuff on a rooftop. And one of them kind of knows a little bit about computers, and we meet, like, I would call him a stoner guy that doesn't know anything about computers, who, you know, kind of happens to find just, you know, a guy that had died. You know, he went to visit, and he's like, oh, he's talked to him, like, no, he's dead. Oh, yeah, who was I talking to? He's been dead for a while. Finds, like, a, you know, an AOL disk, essentially. And puts it in his computer and it gets online, and it's just like the fastest webcam footage load I've ever seen in, you know, 2001. And asking if he wants to see a ghost. And it's just like a webcam shot of that stuff, like no URL or anything like that. So he kind of takes that and goes to the college where the other group is, like, hey, I don't know what this is. Can you tell me what this is? Like, do you have the URL? No. Are you a computer major? No, write this down because you need to remember it. So, like, essentially, you know, try to copy it or, you know, do a print screen of the URL to try to figure out what this is. Like, it sounds like a hacker. In fairness, it does. It sounds like dark web shit that people think always exists. And he's just trying to figure out what's going on here. And we are introduced to, like, the Forbidden Room, which is a bunch of, like, it was sealed off in red tape. It has a whole bunch of monitors. And essentially, like, I'll give away the premise right now. The ghost realm is filled up and they have to come to ours so they don't have enough space, and they're lonely. And this essentially is the idea of this is like a virus that affects people to see ghosts, and like these webcams are essentially ghost point of view and trying not to be alone anymore. And it causes people to kill themselves. Some, you know, throw themselves off like a silo at a refinery in front of people. Others just kind of go into the wall and turn into dust. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to figure out what the goal of the ghosts was.
To make everyone ghosts?
There's this weird thing that they're talking about. Where they're saying, like, okay, the ghosts are coming into this world because it was only a matter of time that they get access to our world through some other device. And they're saying specifically that the computer, because it can, like, do video, sound, and interconnect the world, that they can then use our world.
Yeah.
But they don't want the people there because the people are taking up their space or something. Yeah. And but they can't kill them because if they kill them, they become ghosts and take and go into their world and take up more space. So what they're doing is they're trapping them in loneliness,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't kill them, but it essentially puts them in like a purgatory. So then they leave the real world and they don't go to the ghost world. So then they get their space. I don't know what the fuck that means.
Right.
But that's what they're trying to get across is happening.
Yes. Ghosts make them Artex and they die of sadness and evaporate into a wall.
Right. Right.
That's the movie.
But they somehow don't become ghosts because the ghosts are doing it to them. I don't know.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of filler that's not really that interesting in between to try to figure out what's going on there. And we, you know, maybe see six people turn to dust overall that we get to know.
Yeah. Well, there's like the growing people. There's like two girls and a guy.
Yeah.
The guy sees it first. He like, you know, gets mm-hmm. scared because he goes in the red room and he sees a scary ghost, and then he gets like super depressed and then eventually disappears.
Yep.
And then the one girl, the same thing happens to her, even though the one girl is like doing everything she can to save her, and she disappears into a wall right in front of her. And then she like drives into a car and crashes.
Yeah.
And then so the other one is the dopey guy and the computer teacher are like trying to help each other. And they kind of sort of get a relationship going. Not really, but kind mm-hmm. of. And then she like sees, you know, a ghost thing, and then she gets depressed. And then he's trying to like bring her in and out of what's going on. And then she disappears and he's trying to find her. And then he meets the girl that crashed in the car.
Yeah, like, okay, Japan's fucked. We gotta leave here.
Well, they go to the factory.
And he goes into the forbidden room.
Well, they go to the factory and they witness the computer teacher girl killing herself. Oh,
yeah.
And then they go, okay, we gotta leave. And they're like, oh shit, we don't have any gas. He goes back in to get gas, goes into the red room, he sees a ghost, and then he gets depressed or whatever.
Yeah.
So then she tries to like get out of Japan before he dies, but she fails and he dies anyway.
Yes. And then time has passed, which they said, and they're like, she's on a bigger boat than what the boat they took. And they're like on a ferry. We should check South America, make sure see if there's any survivors, because it's now gone worldwide. Even though the signal is weak, it's still there. So it's, you know, across the world.
Right.
Setting up sequels that they never got, but we got sequels to ours. So.
Right. Well, yeah, interestingly enough, like the guy that she brought with her is dead, and it's just some random ship captain guy.
Yep.
Yep. Who looks like the detective from Cure. I don't know if it's him, but it looks like him.
Well, I know that the guy who made Pulse made Cure, and they work together in multiple things. Well, so that
probably is the same guy then.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's global phenomenon. Tokyo and Japan's completely hosed. Maybe all of South America's gone too. But two people are going to go fight the signal. Somehow. Sure.
Well, I don't think they're going to fight it. I think they just want to go somewhere else where there's people.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the end of the movie. Now, I had seen this, like I said, before. The American one is, I'm going to say this right now, a lot flashier, a lot faster paced. than this movie is.
Well, I can see it being an interesting story. Just the way that they told it is not particularly interesting. Right. It's like it's 2 hours of like depressing watching people like spiral into loneliness and then killing themselves. It's like, and it happens over and over and over again. You're like, wow, man, like this is a depressing movie.
Lots of long pauses again. And the ghost is essentially going, help, help me, help, help, help.
Yep.
That's the ghosties. And maybe scary lady ankles and hands. What was your first thought? Oh, that was your first thought, though. It's just depression.
Right.
Yeah. Do you want me to do my highlights first?
Sure.
All right. This is a techno horror. So kind of sci-fi, but, you know, dealing with computers. And, you know, at this point in time, I don't think there's a lot of horror movies really based on technology, especially like the internet. We have that a lot more now than we did back, you know, 24 years ago. So it's interesting to see that and Japan side of it. Of course, yes, I do want to meet the ghost. And I wrote the ghost stories hit differently in Japan. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, Japan, a lot of ghost stories in Japan are just like ghosts exist.
Yeah.
And that's the story. It's not like the ghost hurt you, the ghost is scaring you or haunting you or trying to do things. It's just like the ghost is there and that's their whole story.
Yep. And, you know, everyone can see a ghost all the time without calling, you know, the Warrens. It's interesting that, you know, this potentially goes worldwide, that it's just not an isolated incident, that the internet is bad for everyone, so it's a bad ending. So I do appreciate that.
I mean, I think it's a prophecy.
It's very well true,
because the internet is terrible for the world.
it is. That's what I have. What are your highlights?
I really liked, like you said, it's a like a techno film, right? Mm-hmm. But like, it's set in the age of like flesh colored computers,
yep, and
dial up modems, which is hilarious looking back on it, you know, like compared to like what, you know, things progressed into in technological era. It's very funny that everybody was scared of the internet when it was like dial up and flesh computers and like giant monitors and stuff. It's just kind of funny. I appreciate the, everything is like very small and everything is like very close to the ground.
Let me roll over. I'm in my bed to my right side and there's my computer.
Right. Yeah. And I'm a little coffee table that's like a foot off the ground and that's it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just super interesting to me. I know it's just a different culture. It's just super interesting to me. How that stuff goes. Like, you know, like Japanese architecture, like classical Japanese houses with like their paper fucking doors and shit. Like, how do you live like that? I would be terrified to live in a house with paper doors.
Oh yeah.
Like, how do you stay warm in a house with paper doors? Anyway, but yeah, so I just like, you know, that little piece of culture and just difference is interesting. And there's a decent use of light and shadow in this film. I will say that they did that well. And that's about it for my high points.
Let's go to your low points.
A low point. Did we really need to see the entire full install progress of the application that he installed? Like, we literally, like, he scrolled through the whole EULA and everything.
Yes, I need to know how to install this in Japanese Windows NT. Thank you very much.
I'm like, why do we have to see all the button clicks? Just fucking do it.
Well, and it was the sad part is that's actually sped up, because we know we were doing computers back then. They were not that fast.
No, but it's just like, I don't need to see this whole thing. Like, the movie's 2 fucking hours long. You could have made that shorter.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a lot of tech support. In this movie, I'm like, did you try this? Did you do that? Did, like, all this like goofy shit. Like, I get that it's like you're making the movie about the internet and these computers, but like, come on now.
Yep.
There's a couple of scenes where they're riding in a bus. Okay, the bus is set up like the old timey classic stuff where they're sitting in the bus, but there's just like a, you know, stock footage behind the bus, right? Mm-hmm. The bus angle is wrong. I don't know if they just didn't get it or if it was done intentionally to like throw you off, But like the way that the bus is driving, it would literally be like balancing on its front wheels with its ass in the air. Like that's how it would be driving forward. Like the angle that the camera is at and the way that they're sitting, it would literally be like that.
Hmm.
And I was just like, are they doing this on purpose? And they use that they use that shot like three times. But yeah, it's only short scenes, but it's like they use it three times in the same issues with all three of them. And again, I don't know if they did it just to kind of throw you off and make you uneasy, or if it's just that bad of a job. I don't know. I didn't get it.
Right.
And the effects are fucking terrible.
Oh, like, absolutely.
The ghost effects are just like blurs, and like the car fires at the end. Like it was like the fakest ass smoke and flame I've ever seen. It was like, I don't even know.
It's Birdemic levels.
Yeah, it's fucking horrible. I was like, holy shit, how did they get away with that bad of effects? Like, wow. And then again,
they're relying on it too.
Yeah. And again, the ending, I don't even know how to feel about the ending. It's like, I literally wrote it across the bottom because both columns. Cause like, I don't even know what the fuck happened. Like it just ended. And then there's like another guy that's not even the character that's like now the main character. It's very, very odd.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, didn't care for the ending.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'll go to Milo points. You know, we barely have enhanced working now versus 2001. Let me enhance on this photograph of this image on the internet and then enhance like five times to get like two levels deep into the picture. No, that's not happening. doesn't work that way. It does not get clearer the bigger you go. God, I don't miss that time. I don't miss the dial up. I don't miss giant ass monitors. I don't miss freaking Windows NT that they were using. It was awful. Bad times. And you know, talk about like the scenes kind of being short and long, but like some of the scenes, like they're like it seems like they're cutting them off mid sentence. It's like they cut the scene really early. Like it's like the scene's going to continue, but no, it just ends. Like, well, we didn't finish what we were talking about here. Why are we cutting already? Like, just the abruptness of the cuts was just jarring somewhat, and maybe that's on purpose. Just like the bus, it's entirely possible to make us, you know, on end. I literally wrote CGI dust. Like this is like if you haven't seen Birdemic, it's essentially what you know. Christian's making a horror movie using Microsoft Paint. That's what this the effects.
Yeah, are. It's like one GIF of a bird flapping its wings, and then just copy and paste like 100 of them. That's literally correct. What it is.
And that's this movie. Empty Tokyo. Sure. Why is there smoke everywhere? Oh, what's that plane doing? It's exploding. Huge ass explosion too. So apparently the people on the plane just died of sadness. Or went into the void of sadness. The ghost, the creepy ghost lady, if you want to call her that, she's going tee hee hee. Oh, I can't see her feet. Oh, there's hands over it. Boo, scary ghost. It's just a person. That's just a person. and he said, the ghost's plan. What's their plan? I don't know.
Right, exactly. They try to like explain it, but it makes no fucking sense.
Yeah. The ghost ran out of the room. And if we're not careful, they're in another room here. Then why? Like,
yeah, but they're not taking up any space. Like, I don't understand. I don't know. I was completely lost when they're trying to explain what was happening.
Maybe ghosts are territorial in their country, and therefore they have to have a square skinny mile.
Yeah, they require somebody to put red tape around the doors of the rooms they live in.
Right.
I don't think.
The American one talks about what the red tape is supposed to do. I don't think they talk about what the red tape does in this movie.
No, they don't.
At all.
Nope. They just tell you don't go in the red room, but they don't say why.
Yeah, I'll spoil it. They say it's for the frequency, and people build Faraday cages to get away from the frequency in the American one. Instead of, nothing.
Okay.
So, because I was talking to my wife, she's like, isn't that where they make the Faraday cage? You go, yeah. In the American one, the Japanese do nothing.
Yeah, they just all die.
Yeah, all six people that we follow.
Yeah, they all get depressed and die. That's it.
Yep. All right. So, Sam, how many dial-up modems out of 10 do you give Pulse from 2001?
I mean, there's some interesting ideas here, but like overall, I don't think I like this. I mean, it just not, there's not enough to grab onto here. There's just a lot of like, you know, plot threads that go nowhere, like characters that just get depressed and die and that's it. Like there's no like redemption for anyone. It's just very odd. And I just, it's just, I don't know, a disconcerting movie. I don't, so 3.75.
Oh wow. I mean, I honestly, this is my favorite of the three. Not by much, mind you. I don't know, just because I had seen this before and I liked the American one a lot, so I kind of like that feels for it. You know, do you need to watch this one again? No, just watch the American one and skip the sequels to the American one because they're not good. That being said, I will give this 6 dial-up modems out of 10. It's an interesting piece to see this Japanese take on it all, but yeah, I mean, they could cut some scenes down, make it better, redo the special effects, might have a better story overall. All right. Anything else to add to this episode?
Not for me.
All right. So, oh, shit. It looks like I missed a call. I must have been at my audition to play a killer called Ichi. Uh-huh. Join us next week as our director spotlight is Takashi.
Takashi Miike. Takashi
Miike. Yeah, I can't speak different languages. And his movies, Audition, Ichi, The Killer, and One Missed Call. Which, yes, we have another one that has a American remake. I think they've talked about Audition American version for years now, I feel like. It's never happened.
Well, I feel like they've marketed Audition to American audiences pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it translates pretty well. It's not like one of these movies that has like this nonsensical plot that doesn't make sense.
Right.
You know, overseas. It's a very kind of simple story that anybody can understand. So it's definitely a foreign film, but it was marketed to the U.S. as its original form.
Yeah.
So I saw it in its original form. So I don't remember them talking about making a remake. I don't know why they would.
You know, because it's, you know, body horror has made a resurgence, and Audition's definitely body horror.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
So. And One Missed Call. I feel like I've watched the original because of the remake. I remember this, you know, 17 years ago. So I'm excited. Because that'll be our last one of solely Japanese movies that don't have American remakes before we get into the month of May. So I'm excited. It's good times. So we watch bad movies, so you don't have to. And this has been Graveyard Saying, have you checked in the children?
This is Salem saying, long live the new flesh.
Good night.